welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. We are always actively involved in the purchase and sale of all forms of rare coins, scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds, compact, valuable, respected hard assets, precious metals, of course, in volume, all forms, gold, silver, platinum, palladium, rhodium. You may not know what some of those are, and that's just fine because they, like rhodium, you don't want to speculate in that. That stuff, I think, has been from $10,000 to $400 an ounce and everything in between, and it's used to plate different things. It's got a real interesting molecular adhesive property where it will bind to any of the metallic elements, unlike any other element. It's very interesting, but it's crazy to invest in. Just in case you're wondering, platinum and palladium. Platinum's always been the metal. Palladium was a sister metal. Platinum and palladium have extreme conductivity, high heat, extremely high heat required in order to achieve the melting point. They're also kind of supernaturally known for cleaning the air. They gather all kinds of contaminants and contagions that float through. That's why they're used in catalytic converters and in the gas masks of like our special ops and stuff when they're out there worrying about nerve agents and things like that. And that's what makes them a precious metal. Platinum's always been around. It got really high about a decade ago. The auto manufacturers remachined to allow for palladium, which was foolish. And then palladium went way up since, primarily pushed up speculatively, and platinum has been down. Platinum is not a bad investment. In fact, it's a good investment. And we're trying to put some in a lot of our portfolios. We don't have a ton of it in stock. But when it's been at price levels like this, I've been traditionally very aggressive about putting it in portfolios. It's been to 2,500. Now it's down in the 800 range. Palladium's up. It was up to 2,800. And it's below two now, roughly. The spreads between the bid ask are super wide, which means the demand is waning, and it's mostly being driven by speculation. That may be too much information for everybody, and all you got to realize is if you come to us to do a portfolio or help you save some money or preserve your wealth or your capital, we make all those decisions for you based on experience and based on value. We do not we never sell or place anything in a portfolio that we would not want ourselves. I have a massive, massive inventory, but only a smaller percentage of it, a very small percentage of it, qualifies as for investment portfolio material. With that and that said, I will tell you, folks, moving forward in this COVID thing, I want to discuss a little bit here, but moving forward in this COVID thing, meaning coronavirus outbreak, quote, quote, we have a tough future ahead. It's really been interesting for me. I'm a businessman, obviously. I have a lot of friends in business, a lot, and I've been communicating with them. And if there's one central theme, it is great frustration. And it's really interesting to watch people operate, those who have faith and those who do not, and everything in between. Those who have faith don't all respond the same either. But talking to friends of mine and communicating with friends of mine that are not people of faith, they are really troubled and unwilling to look it in the eye. That's one thing I've really kind of learned over the years is a lot of people, if they don't have something to explain stuff or a refuge, namely God, they tend to really grow frustrated looking at or discussing the truth. It really rips them up because they start to feel those emotions bubble. As a matter of fact, if you don't have God at the center of your life, not that you're, perfect and holy and righteous, although in God's eyes you are, if you don't have him at the center, you end up stuffing a lot. You end up putting you because it's all about your flesh. It's it, you, you know, whether and there's people that'll grow just very angry that that'll, you know, be professed Christians, but they're not maybe searching God out, working that way, looking that way. And they get angry if you even mention the fact that we have a tendency maybe to feed our flesh. But you'll get a lot of that stuffing and putting away. I've communicated with, like I said, a variety of friends that are very successful and in very hard positions right now. And they're really agitated. Their spirits are just troubled. And they don't know what to do. And, you know, I could quote some of them, but it would lead to what they do for a living. And I don't want to do that. But it's just, to me, it's disheartening because we have to be broad-minded. We really do. As believers, you know, you go to Proverbs and it is just, you know, seek wisdom, seek wisdom, seek wisdom, seek wisdom. What does that mean? You know, reading James this morning, you know, if anyone, you know, lacks wisdom and wants it and they ask without doubting, they'll get it, you know, and this is obviously very important to God. What is wisdom? I mean, what really is wisdom? Wisdom, there's a combination of what it is, but wisdom is seeing things through God's eyes. You know, there's some of the wisest people I've ever met are actually very different and abstract. I've been exposed to Asperger's type people that'll have extraordinary amounts of wisdom because their brain is processing things differently or whatever. I don't know. But so what we tend to seek out in man, the man that we want to hear from or look to is, you know, we may be able to get guidance from him and leadership, but he's not necessarily wise. A lot, you know, if you look at who we gravitate to as humans, who do we really gravitate to? People who are extraordinarily wealthy, extraordinarily gifted in some sport or athletic group, or, you know, extremely good looking, right? I mean, who do we worship? Movie stars, you know, musicians, athletes, high, you know, billionaires. I mean, these are the people. And if we had our choice as humans, most of the time we'd go to those people to seek wisdom. But they don't necessarily have wisdom. Being in business and prior to that, being in banking for a very, very long time and really immersing myself and being involved, The vast majority of people who hit extraordinary success, in fact, I would say virtually all those that hit extraordinary success have to have a component of luck and timing, which, you know, if you've been around it, it's a fact. Even Bill Gates, yeah, he built a computer. It was a great idea at the right time, but he knew how to pursue it and it took off and here we go, you know. I mean, but he had, you know, he made initiative and took steps, but you can't tell me there was luck and timing there. Same with Apple, Steve Jobs. You know, you go Henry Ford or whatever, you know, there you'll find these common characteristics and attributes, work ethic, you know, certain kinds of drive, no fear. I remember when I was, you know, many years ago and when I bought the land that we're on, in like 05 or 04, and then we broke ground in 06 and built the building in 07. It was a tremendous project and an incredible building. I had no fear. And I initially borrowed a tremendous amount of money, paid that off. But, I mean, I had no fear. Now, looking back, I'm like, what was wrong with me? You know, I was like, I don't know. I just had this utter confidence. And it was from the Lord. But, you know, there was a luck and timing component. You know, we had economic changes and fluctuations. We've got another one at our fingertips now. We are absolutely facing a tremendous, tremendously unique and concerning time. This has only begun. You know, I was looking back at, I started mentioning it recently. Ironically, this a thing I wrote up, a little transcript for myself, from April of 19. Exactly a year ago. I called it Fraud's End Suddenly. The bubbles, I said, the bubble that's about to pop will cause far more destruction than any financial bubble in U.S. history, making the housing bubble of a decade ago look minor. And then these are just notes I pounded out to myself. You must understand the dead simple strategies that will save your retirement when stocks fall by 50 to 75% or more. Every major stock market boom has been followed by a long, painfully destructive bear market. And then I said, how long do you wait? And what's motivating you to wait? Extreme investment losses are always driven by greed and unreasonable hope. How much of a loss can you endure? And then I wrote notes to myself, in all honesty, what does the Bible say? What does God call money? You know, I think you know that's precious metals, hard assets. What did God create as money? Same. And what did Christ call money? Same. What has lasted from the beginning of written human history until today? And that's your precious metals-based assets. I know that man has this beautiful system and a silver tongue, and the whole system is designed around it because everybody gets a cut of the pie. From the time a Federal Reserve note is supposedly begun in its process of creation, there are between 14 and 17 different banks that get a little bitty cut out of trillions of dollars every time we make a Federal Reserve dollar. The profit of the privately owned Federal Reserve Bank is hundreds of billions of dollars per year. Profit. That makes them, hands down, bar none, the most profitable corporation in the world. This is a company that was assigned through a constitutional obligatory breach of Congress, the responsibilities given to Congress, enumerated specifically to Congress, that they shall coin money and regulate the value thereof. And they transferred that to a non-government entity. They basically disobeyed what I consider to be a primarily divine document. Some people think that's bizarre. I don't care. That's why I see it. But, I mean, they took that responsibility, handed it off, and now we're being fleeced as a people. I mean, if you think about it, $200 billion a year, if we use that number, divided by 300 million people, it's like $670 a year per person profit. You add that up through your lifetime, you get to some pretty serious money. That was never the intention of our founders. Our founders hated debt. They wrote about it. And now we're in this weird situation where we've got this assumed government bailout. I'm not saying I disagree with it to a degree, to a certain point. But we've got this expectation where I was talking to someone last night, and we were discussing the fact that, like, Andrew Cuomo out of New York, the governor of New York, has gone back and forth with Trump on what rights his state has, where Trump says, I have final authority. The media goes crazy and rips him up and says, you're not an emperor, you're not a king, you're not this, you're not that. They didn't backpedal and take it in context. Trump was stating a fact that there is much truth to. The fact that he has the right to declare a national emergency and to cease that declaration at any time. His point was, number one, when they're declaring a national emergency, as in this case, the government then steps in with a large technical reserve of money. And I say technical because, like Trump said, well, that way we were able to access huge amounts of money. Well, we're not accessing it. We're printing it. We're borrowing it. And believe me, folks, we are borrowing it. So, you know, when, as soon as he does that, he jumps in. I mean, I don't know. In his mind, he's like, what else do I do? He doesn't, if this is, wasn't, had the appearance of a national emergency, I don't know what did. I know the liberals and the bleeding hearts, they're loving it. They're loving the breakdown of society, the breakdown of Trump. They just want destruction to shut it down. And I'm going to cover some information here on that in a minute. But here's where I was going with that. So you've got Donald Trump saying, I've got total authority. And it was in context, it was, he meant, he followed up a previous statement speaking of his ability to declare or deny a national emergency at any time. So once he declares a national emergency, the government will help. Once he says it's no longer an emergency, there's no obligation to help a state. Even with a national emergency, there's no obligation, but we're the United States of America, and that's just how we do things. You know, we take care of our people, and we spread the wealth and whatever else. It's just what we do. And so, however, there's a difference between spreading the wealth and redistributing it, and this has been a great opportunity for them to attempt a redistribution. But when Andrew Cuomo comes out and says he has no authority, he says, I can do whatever I want with my state. He's true. He's right. But he's missing one fair point. And that fair point is that he actually claimed, he said, read the 10th Amendment. Okay, a lot of people don't know what that is. It's very simple. It's probably one of the simplest to understand. It says the power, and it's the 10th Amendment to the Bill of Rights. For those of you who don't know, there's the U.S. Constitution, which was written, and then they added the 10 Bill of Rights, the 10 Amendments. Well, there's more now because they've added to them. But they started with the 10 Amendments. And those were put in that way because if anything changed down the road, it gave them the ability to amend or edit those amendments. That's why they're called amendments. And the 10th Amendment, which was the last one, of course, that and the Constitution passed by Congress on, I think, September 25th, 1789, ratified in December 91. And the first 10 amendments form what we call the Bill of Rights. The last one, and the fact that this is number 10 has significance, it is this. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. So it's basically saying the powers, any power that is not given to the federal government, that is left unmentioned or unaddressed by the Constitution, goes to the state. It also says any power that's not prohibited by the Constitution goes to the states. And then there's a few other logical angles on that. But the bottom line is this. Andrew Cuomo is quoting that the states have a right because the government doesn't. The federal government doesn't, based on the Constitution, have a right to tell him what to do and how to shut down his city and all that. And Trump's right in the fact that he has final authority. If he declares the national emergency over, the state no longer has a right to strip away its citizens' civil rights. And then you end up with a clash between the feds and the state, which we are seeing more and more coming about. One such area is like the legalized marijuana thing. We've got legalized marijuana on a state level, some states, not all, and then we've got federal mandates, laws that say it's illegal everywhere at all times. Now, you know, the feds have a right to protect our borders, to protect the people. That's where the drug thing comes in. But at the same time, it's not enumerated in the Constitution, so you get this split. At this point, it hasn't blown up on us, but it's inevitable that it will. One of my greatest fears, frankly, is the imbalance of power that has developed in this nation between our government and its people. We saw back in the early 90s where we had crazy Janet Reno, Attorney General under Bill Clinton, take off and really just devastate the whole Randy Weaver, Ruby Ridge thing. If you don't know about that, go research that nightmare. Bad as it gets. And then following that, they went after Waco. A large group of isolationist, you know, Christians or whatever you want to call them. Some, they call them a cult, but, you know, it's their thing. And they basically burnt down a massive compound in Waco, Texas, and killed like 53 women and children. And I mean, it was, and it's always, you know, real aggressive action where they're puncturing the walls with a tank and shooting flames, and they deny it later. And the video disputes that. And it was the same with Randy Weaver when they shot and killed his wife while she's holding a baby in the door. And they had, by the way, never done anything wrong. And, you know, and it's just when the government, and that was quite a few years ago. Technology continues to increase now at a you know, concerning rate where we don't have the wherewithal or the need to possess the necessary arms to defend against our government, which was the initial intent of our founders. And, you know, so if things get to that point, it could get bad. Well, the problem is Andrew Cuomo is basically saying, I can take away my citizens' civil rights whenever I want if I think it's an emergency. The answer is no, you cannot. So as Trump declares this a re-ramp to get back to normal, be prepared for these liberal states to just be demanding that they don't go back. They want to stay in chaos. They want to bankrupt the country. They think they're hurting Trump. The problem is, and I've talked to a few of my liberal friends, and I'm like, you don't want Biden, do you? And they'll just sit there quietly. Folks, tell your friends, they need to be real careful what they're wishing for. I mean, we, you know, Donald Trump has some faults. He started out real aggressive and real strong, and I don't think he knew what the lack of a backbone that a huge part of our society would have. It's interesting, you watch the politicians, the vast majority of the politicians that Trump technically ran over to get to the office. But, you know, he was pure. He could just go out and say what he wanted because they didn't have anything on him. But the vast majority of politicians have come around. They've forgiven him. They've given up. They've actually bonded with him and worked with him, all but like Mitt Romney. Lindsey Graham held out forever. It's interesting. Lindsey Graham and John McCain were united against never Trumpers until McCain got sick and left, and then somehow Lindsey Graham jumped on board. I'm not sure if there was a pact or something he didn't want to break or what. But the vast majority of politicians have figured out, and other business professionals, have figured out they're better off in the good graces of the president of the United States than they are against him. A lot of the liberals haven't. And it's just, it's ripping our country apart, frankly. I think you know that. But it does require a lot of prayer. And we are in a very challenging time. I will not deny that. So, what I was mentioning earlier, when I was talking about the Frauds End Suddenly that I wrote back in April, as I go on, it says what I discuss what the Bible calls money, what Christ called money, what God created as money, what's lasted from the beginning of written human history till now. That's precious metals based assets. People watch everything as a speculative asset. They're like, oh, is it going up? Is it going down? Is it da 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 da? And that is the thought process that has been developed. Because of the Federal Reserve concept, because you have to gain interest on your investment to keep up with inflation. There's real inflation, and then there's the reported inflation. Real inflation's a lot higher. And so you get it, you get where there's no peace. You can't just rest on your money. You can't just say, I've saved this much, I'm going to retire. You have to go, what about down the road, 5 years, 10 years, and inflation's going to consume it. How am I going to make my money grow? How am I going to preserve my wealth? Precious metals-based assets, folks, they follow that trend consistently. They may lag at times, and they, you know, they may hypertrophy or grow way beyond what the market is. But in general, the trend is the trend of inflation. And what's more important is they're never lost. You always have them. There is a shortage of metals. We've been around 25 years. We have good contacts. We have ways to locate them. The premiums are a little bit higher than usual. But that's because the real market is not in play. The COMEX has been shut down. The reserves are drained. There's 95% of the businesses in America are shut down. People aren't out and about, et cetera. So there's a premium on the metals. But at the same time, there's some great values out there. And it's a good time to build a portfolio. Because what's coming next, folks, is going to be exceedingly traumatic, in my opinion. And so, let's see if I can. Oh, nice. Well, I was reading today. Oh, that's convenient. So, oh, here we go. Now I got it. I had my little notes here. So, you may have read this weekend a headline that said, and I go to Google and search it. They don't have the real headline out here. It's really kind of a kick. So there's a headline that kicks out this weekend that says, you know, basically Stanford study shows that the infection rate or prevalence of COVID-19 may be 50 to 85 fold what we previously expected. In other words, the amount of infection, the infection rate in our nation, they're saying, according to their study. Now, you got to remember, Stanford is no slack of a school. Their professors are not slackers or fools. I have a strong background in mathematical statistics, and which is applied towards scientific studies to calculate every kind of outcome you can imagine. And when I read this, I'm like, I got to see it. So then I read the study, and the study's conducted well, I thought. And they use certain statistical parameters, and people go into, you know, all kinds of debates against it that at this point I won't necessarily get to. Maybe in a bit I will. But I went and I read the actual study itself, COVID-19 antibody seroprevalence in Santa Clara County, California. And they list all these big names, all these professors and statisticians and mathematicians and scientists that were involved, because they're publishing a journal article. And then although it says this article is a preprint and hasn't been certified by peer review, blah, blah, blah. And then it goes down what they call the abstract, explaining, you know, the background and what they're addressing and what policies they're using and what parameters they're using and what mathematical methods they're using and what kind of disease they're looking for and how many people they studied, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, from there, they come up with a prevalence. So basically they studied 30, well, they got a random sample per se of 3,330 people in Santa Clara County. On 4-3-4-4, they conducted the tests for antibodies to SARS-CoV-2 using a lateral flow immunoassay. Okay, and then it says they adjusted for zip code, sex, and race, ethnicity, just so they have the statistical data, and they adjust for test performance characteristics. They use three different estimates, a test manufacturer's data, a sample of 37 positive, 30 negative, and all this stuff I won't get into. I don't want to confuse you. I'm just letting you know. So here's the outcome. In Santa Clara County, after they conducted the study of 3,330 people, which is a random sample, and that's how you do things. How'd they get? I always ask, where did you get the study? They actually got the study through Facebook, or they had the candidates through Facebook, and they gave, you know, people the ability to sign up. And I don't know all the details there, but I know statisticians know how to do that in a way that they can, you know, they can protect for bias and all that kind of stuff. And I have a lot of faith in some of these people that I know their names. So it says here, the prevalence estimates represent a range, because you have to have standard deviation. And in this case, they're using a statistical analysis method, which has a maxed out standard deviation because of the severity of the condition. Depending on what you're looking for and the variables that can be added to it, there's another thing called a Bayesian method where it was one of the hardest things to learn at my 400 level, where you have a statistical model that you can continue to add more data or variables to as you begin to study the population. They didn't do that, but in this case, it's a very binary study. Do you have it? Do you not? They're looking for the antibody. If you had it, have you not? Do you have it? It's all the same. If you've had it or do have it, it's the same. I'm going somewhere with this. There's a purpose to it. So the outcome, the prevalence estimates represented a range, they said, between 48,000 and 81,000 people infected in Santa Clara County by early April. That's 50 to 85-fold more than the number of confirmed cases. Conclusions, the population prevalence of SARS-CoV-2 antibodies in Santa Clara County implies that the infection is much more widespread than indicated by the number of confirmed cases. Population prevalence estimates can now be used to calibrate epidemic and mortality projections. So what is the natural response? Oh, goody. That means tons of people have it. No one knows they have it. So all these mortality projections are minuscule. They're wrong. But the true mortality is infinitesimal. That's the response. Like, wow, this is amazing. Because if somebody's had it, I've said for a while that, you know, they said that another study showed that up to 85% of people who were infected were permanently asymptomatic. They didn't say, well, hey, it's a lot more mild than we thought. They said, oh no, those people are super spreaders and we need to lock everybody up. It's political, folks. They don't want good news. If you don't believe me, I'll touch on the responses to this scientific study after I go over this article with you here. That's a response to it. So I was doing some, you know, trying to look up the article on my phone, and I get this, you know, one of the top ones, feud over Stanford coronavirus study. Here's from the Mercury News. The authors owe us all an apology. So you go down, and it goes through these lists, and it says, did you miss a day in statistics class? The COVID-19 pandemic is here to help. In the wake of the startling Stanford report that suggests as many as 81,000 people could have already been infected with coronavirus in Santa Clara County, number nerds are taking to Twitter to debate sampling methods, false positives, and Bayesian inferences with a furor reminiscent of the banning of @BabyYodaBaby. Now, I don't know what that is, and I don't care to know. But, you know, so now we're debating scientific methods of the top immunology and virology scientists in the world at Stanford University on Twitter. Isn't that really the way you do peer review of scientific studies? Is you go to Twitter and you throw out a bunch of 160 character arguments back? I mean, seriously, folks, this is what we do now. It's called confirmation bias. We go into these groups that all agree with us and we just spew ignorance. That is, you've got a string of some of the best the most respected statistical professors in the world and, you know, and scientific study experts and everything. And now we got the media that cares about Twitter. Folks, here's the problem. When the media has what they want, They use propaganda or they to push forth their agenda. They have experts. Well, Johnny Boy Smith is an expert. They never tell you how Johnny Boy Smith became an expert at COVID-19 SARS-CoV-2 studies using, lateral flow immunology. But all you know is that Johnny Boy is really good at fixing car tires. I mean, they don't tell you this. You don't even know. They just tell you they're an expert. And do you know, because of our respect for authority, we accept that. When you go on TV and they make someone an expert, we just accept it. They're an expert. So that must be what I should think. It's complete foolishness. A scripture that just drills into my head during this, Proverbs 18:2. I love this scripture, but it's deep, deep, deep. And it sounds simple. A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his own opinion. A fool takes no pleasure in learning the truth, but only in pushing his agenda. We've all got an agenda, some more than others. Why in the world would people get ticked off over this study? I can tell you, I'm going to go on and you can help me help you understand it. And so in the wake of this startling Stanford report that suggests as many as 81,000 people could already be infected in Santa Clara County. Of course, they don't give the population of the county in the article, and I don't have time to look it up. The heated debate over a few percentage points has the virus in, and it says, has the virus infected 2.5% to 4.2% of county residents, as the study asserts, or is the number closer to 1%? Captures our cultural zeitgeist, sheltering at home in fear of both a virus and an economic meltdown. You hear that? In fear of both a virus and an economic meltdown. Now, all of a sudden, they're saying, well, are the scientists right? Or is the crack science that we've been quoting in the media right? Because our crack science is way more convenient to our agenda. Critics claim the study's methodology is dangerously flawed and question the political motives of the Stanford-led team. Well, folks, let me tell you a little secret. Stanford is not known for being a big political supporter of Donald J. Trump. The political motivations of the Science Corps of Stanford University is not conservative. I think you might agree with that. It's in Stanford, California. It's extraordinarily liberal. One of the most liberal colleges out there, frankly. And it's funny that they, when the media doesn't have a good argument, their attack, they don't bring an argument to the table. Their attack is on somebody else's motives because their motives are usually pretty bad. So I think that's just a crazy joke. But anyway, it says critics claim the study's methodology is dangerously flawed in the question, and they question the political motives of the Stanford-led team. Others have pointed to the study as proof that COVID-19 is merely a partisan-driven flu hoax. Okay, that's pushing it way on the other wing, right? They're not coming to any sensible center point here. It says, as protests broke out this weekend in parts of the country over frustrations with the shutdowns, and they should be breaking out, folks. These people are being hurt. They're being bankrupted. They can't put food on the table. When does the government come in? Why should the government come in? Is that what this country's built on? Charity is good and all that stuff. But I mean, if you're living paycheck to paycheck and they shut you down and tell you can't do it anymore and what you're this great patriot, this is kind of what they did during the Great Depression, folks. They pushed a lot of things over the cliff that did not need to go there. And it was just for this very, concept. It was this patriotic control thing by the liberals in general, mostly. So In response on Sunday, the study's authors said they're planning to soon release a detailed appendix that addresses many of the criticism and incorporates many of the suggestions into the paper itself. So they'll probably use other statistics at the bottom of the paper before it's published and say, if we did this, we'd have this. And they say, well, you should apply this type of statistics. Okay, well, let me tell you something, folks, being a background in a statistical mathematician, you can't gather, when you do a statistical research report, you don't gather the data, okay? And you might not understand this, but there is a variety of different forms of statistics that you can use. But it begins at the beginning, at the hypothesis. It begins at the theorem. You determine what kind of statistics you're going to run, and then you follow up the whole study on that. You can't change midstream. It's exactly what the liberals did with the election. Well, Hillary won the popular vote, but that's not the statistical calculation method that our electoral system is based on. Well, it doesn't matter. If we would have used this other form of statistical gathering, she'd have won. Wrong again. If that was the ground rules before the game began or before the research project, which is really what an election is, if that was the ground rules beforehand, then Trump probably would have won that too. But it doesn't matter because you can't apply a different set of statistical parameters to a population study that's already been conducted. This is where the average public doesn't understand what they're reading or listening to. You can't do that. And then if it doesn't fit the narrative, I mean, really? Do we want this to not be true? I mean, you know, I tried to post a response to it. And, of course, I had to log in here and there and join this and that. And I chose not to do that. So it says, so it incorporates many of the suggestions of the paper. We've received a vast number of constructive comments and suggestions on our working paper over the past few days, said Dr. Jayanta Bhattacharya, professor of medicine at Stanford University. And it goes on, you know, we're looking forward to engaging with other scholars as we proceed. Da, 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 da. The estimate posted on the website MedRxiv comes from a first-in-the-nation community study of newly available antibody tests of 3,300 Santa Clara County residents in early April. Like all other emerging COVID-19 research papers, the work has not been peer-reviewed. Which, yeah, anyway. The authors contend between 48 and 81,000 of the county's 1.9 million residents had been infected with the virus as of the first week of April. That's 50 to 85 times more than the number of official count of cases at the time. If true, it suggests the large majority of people who contract COVID-19 recover without ever knowing they were infected. If undetected infections are that widespread, then the death rate in the county may be far less than 0.02%. So, therefore, far less lethal than authorities have assumed. It also implies the virus probably cannot be eradicated at this high level of prevalence and that, quote, contact tracing, unquote, tracking down people who might have been exposed to the infected person, could be nearly impossible. Whether the true infection rate is higher or lower, Santa Clara County Executive Dr. Jeff Smith remains steadfast in his interpretation of the study's findings. It suggests that more than 95% of the population remains susceptible to the infection and asymptomatic people spread the virus. Now we're back to the super spreader thing. There, and this is crazy, folks. I got to back up. So he says that all means that there is far more risk than we were originally aware of. What? That is so silly. If I'm telling you there's a disease spreading and it kills 3% of the recipients, and then I find out later that, you know, and I thought that 100,000 people were infected, and then we find out later that 8 million people are infected, and the statistical, the mortality rate crashes through the floor and dissipates, becoming far less than anything else we've ever worried about, and that the vast, vast majority, the great majority of recipients are asymptomatic. It doesn't even bother them. Is that bad news? Does that mean, oh my gosh, this thing's so much more dangerous? All these people could be sick and never know it. Can you imagine that? All these people, they could have this terrible virus and they'd never even know they ever had it. What are we going to do? We've got to lock more people up. I mean, folks, this is politically motivated. This is the worst. A fool takes no pleasure in truth, but only in pressing forth his agenda. That's Kevin's version of Proverbs 18:2 on April 20th, 2020, because it'll change every time I quote it. In my own words, this is crazy. The study's authors. And then what do they do here? That all means there's more, far more risk than we initially were aware of, said Smith, lamenting how some are using the study to challenge Bay Area health officials' unprecedented stay-at-home orders. The study's author defends their technique, saying they adjusted for the test kits, performance, and sampling techniques to estimate the prevalence of the virus in Santa Clara County. And then it's, again, here we go. But over the weekend, watch this. Here's the propaganda again. Some of the nation's top number crunchers took to Twitter to challenge the Stanford research, saying it's an extrapolation that rests on a flimsy foundation. Back up again. But over the weekend, some of the nation's top number crunchers. Who are the nation's top number crunchers? See, that's that we don't say... A large quantity of non-scientifically registered anonymous nobodies were blaring their ignorance on Twitter. No, we have to say some of the nation's top number crunchers. I mean, this stuff's crazy, folks. I'm sorry, man. And to say, well, that means there's more risk than we ever thought. And whether the true infection rate is higher or lower, Santa Clara County Executive Dr. Jeff Smith remains steadfast in his interpretation of the study's findings. It suggests that more than 95% of the population remains susceptible to the infection, and asymptomatic people spread the virus. We need more lockdowns. We need to lock people down more. There's still 95% of the people that haven't gotten it. What? We're finding out so many people have it, folks, and this is kind of what I was suspecting from some of the data I was picking up here and there. Sadly, I have that twisted mathematical mind, and I still wouldn't consider myself one of the nation's top number crunchers, even if I was on Twitter, which I wasn't. And I could go on and on. It's like, how about this one? They contended the Stanford analysis is troubled because it draws sweeping conclusions based on statistically rare events and is rife with sampling and statistical imperfections. Show me where and how the immunology, virology, and Stanford PhD statistics departments. Yeah, right. I'm sorry, folks. I've been around this stuff a long time, and that, they're just ticked off. They're going to brush this article under the rug, okay? And then they say they need to apologize. I won't even go on. I think they say the authors owe us an apology, not just us, but to Stanford, wrote Andrew Gelman at Columbia, you know, the flaming lefty bouncing off the wall group, calling the conclusion some numbers that were essentially the product of statistical error. I mean, okay, I can't take much more of this, folks. Sorry. I could keep going, but it's just crazy. They use these weird quotes out of context. They don't understand. They even in this article, they even spelled Bayesian incorrect for the Bayesian inference, which is a form of statistics they say they should have used. Well, for what? What other variables were going to pop up as you're testing, doing a binary test on whether or not people have the COVID antibody serum? I mean, bing. You know, this is just people spewing ignorance. So I think you got my point on this, okay? So I want to go and I want to touch on something else. So I discussed the Bayesian approach. I won't get into that too much. It's conditional probability. It doesn't matter. I won't get into that. So now they, as I was kind of studying this today, we keep hearing Biden saying, you know, and Biden, folks, I think his IQ is about 14. I think that he's definitely got, he's senile, and that's why Obama hesitated until he had the nomination to support him. And I think now, he's, you know, when he comes out, he never says that Biden is extremely competent to be president. He says things like, I chose Joe Biden to be my vice president. It was one of the best decisions I've made, whatever that means. It's because Joe Biden was so clueless, he never got in the way. And that's even when Trump got Pence. They were looking at Newt Gingrich, and they thought, you know, Newt's a very strong personality. That might not work. You might have a clash of personalities. For a Veep, you need a guy who's just very good, respectful, compliant, right-hand man. A guy who's just there for you 24/7, come heck or high water, you know. So Biden in the media keeps saying, well, follow the science, follow the science. Well, Trump has followed the science. He's followed Fauci and Birx, the CDC. You can go back every time they criticize him. It's crazy. It's just nuts that he has followed the science that he's been given. That's all he could follow. You know, he hasn't called it a hoax and all that repeatedly, you know. And then we've got the Stanford study tells us that we could have what's called herd immunity, okay? This is what my takeaway is. Fauci, that's this liberal guy who's the expert that's, you know, consulting Trump, and he's on TV with him all the time. In one interview, he admits that a lockdown, as we've done, is just postponing the inevitable. And, of course, the lockdown was his plan. But in different interviews, he says different things. So if there's a lockdown, and it is as they say, you're just postponing the inevitable. When everybody gets out, they're all going to get it. Well, I know we've been flattening the curve. But you can't, so you flatten the curve and let everybody out, and then it takes off again? Folks, when we look at the number of people on Earth and deaths from different diseases and different ailments and problems, and then we start to draw these types of statistics, I mean, we're getting this, we're getting these kind of results from multiple studies. Like I said, a week or two ago, 85% of the people that have it are asymptomatic, without symptoms. Now we've got a 50 to 85-fold infection rate that's non-detectable because they're asymptomatic. Listen to that. Don't say, well, you know, maybe that's all false and it's wrong. And yeah, okay, if you want to drink the Kool-Aid, I understand that there's highly susceptible genres and groups and certain groups of people, certain age categories, and certain medical situations make people far more susceptible. But we don't even get good data on who's supposedly dying. You know, extreme obesity, type 1 diabetes, people that are 89 years old. I just heard on the news this weekend there was an 88-year-old lady that got it, and she was fine. She did just fine. It didn't even bother her. But they knew she got it because she got exposed to her daughter, who was a nurse. And they figured out her daughter had it. Her daughter was fine, too. There's something about this. I don't know. I'm not an immunologist, but there's something. It may not be as fear-worthy as you think. The death toll is nowhere near that of the influenza based on the statistics. They cannot come out with statistics that represent what they're telling us. What they're telling us is based on a population that they know have it because they come in because they're sick. And then they take people, and then some testing parameters, yes. But in general, it's people who are sick, bring themselves in, and they go, COVID, COVID, COVID. Oh, that one died. Okay, percentage, take all the sick, take all the dead, divide by the sick, and that's your percentage. Wrong. That's not how you do it. There's a massive amount of the population that you're never going to hear from or see from. And then we don't even get accurate information. We don't know who's passing away or why. They don't give us any truth statistics. How many have been truly, you know, authenticated to have the disease? They've been tested. We don't know all this. We're not getting it. We're not getting their health parameters. You know, they'll say age and sex, and that's about it when they pass. And there's all this data coming out saying that we're doing, hey, if it looks like COVID, smells like COVID, we're going to call it COVID. The WHO, World Health Organization, for COVID, they have two different diagnosis codes for COVID. One is testing. The other is basically anything that looks like it, smells like it, maybe... you know, and here's what it is if I have time. It says emergency use ICD codes for COVID-19 disease outbreak. Okay, COVID disease outbreak, classification of diseases. Do I have time here? This document provides instructions. Oh, come on. Get me to it. Sorry. I thought it would come right up when I looked. But this is a long document. So here's there's two ways of reporting it. One is positive test results only, patients showing no symptoms. And then they have patients represented with acute respiratory illness and probable contact with COVID. Patients present with acute respiratory illness and no documentation of COVID. Self-referral, they've got, anyway, I won't get into it all. The bottom line is simple. It is, there's two ways that they determine it. I wish I had time to get that more ready for you, but I'll hurry. It's one is virus not identified is assigned to a clinical or epidemiological diagnosis of COVID. That's the one that's setting us back. Virus not identified just looks like it, and it's okay, right? And that's what we're doing. So in general, what we're going to be looking for here, folks, is what's called herd immunity. The whole group, the population builds an immunity and then the disease dies. We're not seeing any indications otherwise. The lockdowns are killing us in every way possible. A vaccine would help, of course, but that's not coming anytime soon. Anyway, so we'll just leave it at that. Be at peace. If you'd like, we're out of time again. Haven't had it for a while. If you want a couple nice silver dollars, and believe me, the market's good on them. So give us three nice reviews online, Google, Yahoo, and whatever else. I don't know is out there that I can't think of it off the top of my head. Call us. We'll verify it, and we'll give you a couple nice silver dollars. Also, get your money secured. Get in here. Let you know. Take your savings and secure it before the tsunami's coming financially, folks. This has only begun. It's huge. So take care. God bless and have a great night. Thanks. Bye-bye.